Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. Back in the early 90s, before the transhumanist scene really got started, there was a magazine called Mundo 2000, and its editor, Are You Serious?, was one of the precursors of Wired and all of that techno-libertarian, techno-liberatory approach to things, except that he came out of the psychedelic subculture, and he was also the founding editor of High Times. And after Wired took the niche for Mundo 2000 and Mundo 2000 closed, in 2000, Are You Serious? Wrote a book called The Revolution, which you can find at revolting.com. The quotations of party chairman Are You Serious?, which has a 10-15 point agenda for social reform, which is a very interesting and very useful contribution to the discussion. And now Are You Serious? Is the editor of a product called Neophiles. This will be the second half of the interview with Are You Serious? In the first half of the interview, which you can hear at changesurfer.com, we left off with a discussion about whether there weren't any drugs that Are You Serious? Thought should be regulated, and he was about to outline his ideas for a drug policy.
Should we use government to intervene between people and the substances they want? I would say possibly in really extreme cases. I've always been open to the idea that drugs like methadrine and, say, heroin maybe should not be available on the commercial marketplace, but should be medicalized. So I've never been 100% inflexible on the cognitive liberty issue, but also just from a pragmatic level as to what is likely to be accomplished. I actually think that medicalization will probably has a chance of becoming a reality, a greater chance of becoming reality than the institutionalization of the idea of cognitive liberty. I also housewives shooting up Botox is certainly like a bizarre image of the self-enhancement, alteration mutant future. I mean, it's a fascinating image. It's, worthy of a Terry Gilliam or, David Cronenberg. And I certainly wouldn't do anything to stop them from, freezing their faces in position. But it's, it does give one pause. it's certainly peculiar. I tend to not want to interfere or pass judgment as a matter of my personal reflex, although I'm not a hardcore libertarian by any means.
I should say not, because the platform that you put out recently in the 2000 election was hardly predictable in any particular sense.
Yes, absolutely. And to my delight, the libertarians thought I was a libertarian, and the leftists thought I was a leftist. You could always get the opposite response. So I thought, oh, that's good.
Well, before we get to the revolution platform, which is at revolting.com, for those who want to leap ahead here, Mundo 2000 was really a landmark, I think, in pulling together a lot of these threads. High Frontiers, I also had been exposed to, but it was really oriented towards a druggy subculture kind of message, whereas Mundo 2000 really opened that up and tried to address a lot of different themes.
Yes.
And I know other people have commented on this, but it really seemed like it set the groundwork for Wired magazine because of at least the graphic style and some of the themes as well that kind of hold Whole Earth Review, printing out to the edges of the margin, having lots of things happening on the page at once.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely the art style of Wired was influenced, and the content of Wired was influenced. Kevin Kelly said that we were the only thing that was vaguely similar, And he once said that Wired was Mondo 2000 for adults.
Well, I'm not sure if that means that Wired's better or worse than Mondo 2000.
I guess there's room for both. I have no problem with that. I mean, at the time, there was definitely a competitive edge, and Wired felt like the corporatization of what Mondo was doing. You get over those things after a while.
Hold on one second. Okay, good. The phone went off there for a second. So Mondo, what was the print run of Mondo?
Mondo got up to about 100,000. I mean, the thing about Mondo, I mean, most magazines, if you say their print run was 100,000, that meant they sold maybe 40,000 copies. They would get them out to these large distributors, and they would get pulped. But we operated all through all small alternative distributors and generally just kept a few thousand issues, and we printed the issues that we thought we were going to sell. And we gave away quite a few also. We were party on dudes at the time, dudes and girls. We were going to a lot of public events, and we were really a presence on the San Francisco scene. And we were partly a club culture in a lot of ways. And some writers even compared us to like Warhol's Factory and so forth. So it was a social phenomenon in the Bay Area, which seemed to increase somehow the public profile of the magazine, even nationally and internationally. People somehow picked up on this vibe that it was this whole culture scene that was going on, which was great fun, actually.
I'm speaking with Are You Serious? He's the former editor and founder of Mondo 2000. He's working now on a project called Neofar. Started a variety of different projects. One of those ended up as the Revolution book, with a preface by Andrei Codrescu, who's one of my favorite satirical writers.
Andrei is great.
Yeah. And so how did that project come about? What was the inspiration? And then we'll talk about a little bit of the platform that you outlined there.
Yeah, actually, I mean, the project came about a period where I wasn't really doing much, and sort of in a fairly nebulous state of mind. It was sort of the long drift after Mondo 2000 finally kind of came to this space of just kind of laying back and saying, oh, hell with it, why am I trying to accomplish anything when it's so difficult to accomplish things? It sort of came along with sort of a Taoist kind of, all right, I'm just going to meditate for a while. But I had to write something for the disinformation online publication, and when I sort of emptied out my mind and saw what came to the surface, all this sort of really policy wonk kind of stuff came to the surface. It's like, rather than a vague cultural or a mimetic framework for changing society, all these kind of things, well, number one, number two, number three, and the drug war and the prison industrial complex, real specific. I actually don't have them in front of me, and I don't even remember them right now. Maybe you know what they were, but I mean, all these specific policy ideas that I thought were not that radical and actually doable in a real world where, you wouldn't have to overthrow the government to accomplish these things or anything. That's what came into my head. So I contextualized it all in as a political party and as a presidential candidacy, and it went out, and much to my shock and horror, lots of people responded to it. I put it on the disinfo site and thought, oh, maybe a couple of people will respond, and then maybe we'll do something interesting with it. But I got more responses than I really knew what to do with. And I set about the process of actually, trying to organize a group, which turned out to be very difficult. I seem to have attracted mostly slackers ongoingly.
I've been a political organizer for the last 30 years, and I'd say that that's probably true of almost all political organizations.
Right. But it did, I did carry on through internet media, the presidential write-in campaign, which was great fun, and put together a group of quotes and the party platform into a book that was designed just like Chairman Mao's famous Little Red Book, and published by Feral House. I thought, God, putting a Little Red Book out there, this is really going to get people's attention. But I think that, you know, like for most people like under 30, they didn't even get the reference.
I know. Well, I work at a college, and I'm afraid that most young people don't really have that broad a political background.
Yeah.
But I recently compared myself to Trotsky, and I actually got an outraged response from Belgrade. When a transhumanist in Belgrade thought it was politically bad to compare oneself to Trotsky since he was a mass murderer, which I don't necessarily agree with. But at any rate, I thought that was funny. The kind of post-communist retro tongue-in-cheek aspect of that. But your platform actually relates in a lot of ways, I'm sure you've been told, to the Green Party platform. Were you never attracted to the Greens? I mean, what your project kind of relates back to for me is the old Yippies. Like, they ran nobody for president in 1968, and they ran a pink pig for president in 1972. And then along the way, they, in that course of that satire, they said a lot of interesting things about politics. But your platform's actually pretty close to the Greens.
That may well be true. There's something about the Green style, and I can never get comfortable with any political group. You know, it's like you go to hang out with the Greens, and people are trying to tell you what to eat and what to wear, and they're frightened of frankenfood and cellular phones and television, and and then you go to decide, well, maybe I'll go hang out with the libertarians, and they're making jokes about how Hillary Clinton is like Mao Zedong or something like that. And it's like, I can't get, I wanted to create something for people who are really flexible and non-ideological, and I do find the Greens, I find it to be fairly ideological and not particularly pro-tech, although I mean certainly interested in alternative technology, which I support. I'm not touting, I certainly it would be great if they were to hold office.
I confess that here in Connecticut, I did work for Nader last time around, but only because Gore had a 17-point lead. But, you know, if I ever was actually actively involved in the Greens, I'm sure that I would get brickbats for the various transhumanist positions that I hold.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost diametrical. I mean, one of the things we have here this week was the biotechnology conference, where a lot of the same people who show up to protest against the war in Iraq and against corporate domination of the globe and so forth showed up to for very militant protests against the biotechnology conference. And while there is a lot to be said about the corporate domination there, and there's certainly there couldn't be a more intense example of anti-human weirdness than the development
Terminator gene?
The Terminator gene, where you have to return to the company like you return to Microsoft for the next software update, intentionally creating scarcity in terms of food. Of course, we can talk about how that's done anyway. But nevertheless, I mean, the appearance of these people on the street, I think, largely is reactionary. You know, and it's all about fear of frankenfood and general fear of technology. And of course, there's a great strong relationship between a lot of the anarchists. Movement in America and philosophers like John Zerzan, who think that we should go return to the hunter-gatherer stage. I talked to John Zerzan. He's a very likable guy. I like him very much.
You interviewed him?
You couldn't have a more reactionary position than that.
John Zerzan's basically Ted Kaczynski without the bombs.
Yeah, right.
Well, you, I mean, as you say in your platform, end corporate rule, don't corporatize the human genome, close down the prison industrial complex. You've got a critique of corporate power in that platform and that in those, the document. But yet at the same time, one can be pro technology, that you can, the two things are separable, the technology and the power relations of the technology.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that drives me crazy with people who are politicized at all, almost in any way, is this rushing to one side or the other and this inability to parse the details. I mean, that's one of the great tragedies, I think, of political discourse is, it's going to sound obvious, but, it's not black and white, that one has to look really precisely at the details. And I mean, that's in one of my strongest objections to libertarianism at this stage is, it's easy to say that the market will take care of everything, but when you get down and start looking at the details, real people are hurt when the federal government stops looking at the meat supply, stops making sure that education is being taken care of, and like that. So I find it interesting. I mean, that for instance, like with global warming, I know people who are libertarians who don't believe there's such a thing as global warming. I know a few people who think, well, there's global warming, but we don't know that it's caused by human activity. And global warming either exists or doesn't exist, and the science is the same, whether you're looking at it wanting to believe that an unregulated market and an unregulated life works, or wanting to believe the opposite, that everything should be highly regulated. I think that people who are pro-tech, but also not particularly stuck on a political ideology, occupy an interesting position in this kind of discourse, because my natural prejudice was to ignore all the talk about the global warming, until it became rather overwhelming. And then my prejudice was that I'm no expert on weather systems, and if 99% of reliable scientists are saying that this is a phenomena, a real important phenomena, and some people who I trust who are scientists are saying this is a serious thing, then I'm going to adjust my political positions towards the reality that global warming can really mess up human life, and is already messing up human life, and can really do so in the future. I'm going to readjust my views for that. At the other extreme, on the left, you find people who will not consider that biology has anything to do with human behavior. That the entire idea of evolutionary psychology, your Edward Wilson's work, that this just has to be rejected out of hand, which seems almost to me it's almost like the to me it's like the Christian view that the human beings are somehow separated by from the animals, maybe not made in Jesus's God's image, but made in Marx's image or what have you. And I would say it's an equal absurdity.
Right, the Christians think that homosexuality is a purely moral choice, and the left-wingers think it's all socialization. Except in that particular case, homosexuality, they're willing to buy biological determinism, but not for anything else.
Right. I mean, everything is according to what one needs for one's political beliefs. And that's something I would love to see people get away from and get beyond. And certainly I know a number of people in libertarian circles who are serious about global warming, are not buying into just believing what is convenient to believe.
I'm speaking with Are You Serious? He's the editor of Mondo 2000. He edits Neophiles at lifeenhancement.com/neophiles and is the editor of the fascinating manifesto Revolting at revolting.com called The Revolution. Let's talk in our final section here about Neophiles, which is your most recent editorial project, and you've got 7 issues out of this online magazine. What's the inspiration? What's the goal with Neophiles? What do you want to do with that?
Yeah, well, I tell you, I mean, Neophiles, of course, it plays off of X-Files, and of course, it plays off of neophilia, the love of the new. And in some sense, it can even be seen to play off the character Neo in the Matrix. I see it as an investigative outlet in some ways. I mean, I do interviews, so I'm going in there and I'm asking questions and probing and poking around. And for the most part, dealing with people who are, in fact, neophiles, people who are lovers of the new, people who are interested in technologies, scientific advances, and also techniques, for personal development that bring about transformations or mutations or what have you. I wouldn't call it a transhumanist site. The purpose is not to necessarily advocate that point of view, but to probe that point of view and to probe other points of view that also relate to neophilia. And that's sort of the intention there. And it was a great merger between myself and Will Block, who runs the Life Enhancement Products site. And we had just been chatting, and we had this mutual area of interest. He actually is a libertarian, by the way, but we had this mutual area of interest, and he decided, let's go for it. Let's do this site and see what happens with it.
Well, you've had a fascinating set of guests there and interviewees. The fact that you use the word transhumanism in your site at all is enough for us. I mean, we're into seeing the meme spread a little bit. You're also working on a project now, a book project called Countercultures Through the Ages.
Yep.
What's that all about?
Here I'm casting back. This is a book. The subtitle is From Abraham to Acid House. And it's a book about cultures that were, first of all, anti-authoritarian and also tended to advocate a culture of transformation, of continual change. Set a high priority on authentic individualism, nonconformity. And then there are a whole bunch of sub-themes that continue to emerge in almost all of the these cultures. And you can see that this is a perennial phenomenon that emerges throughout history, and that's what I'm showing in this book. Also assisted in this book by Dan Joy. And the idea originated from a conversation between Dan Joy and Timothy Leary. So it was partly Leary's idea and in some ways perhaps a way of, for him, he never got to do the project, but for a way for him to sum up his own career and put it into a historical context. But it goes back to the Socratics and the Taoists and beginnings of Sufism and Zen and the cultural and political revolutions of the Enlightenment, Bohemian Paris in the early 20th century. That's just a few of the specific cultures that we take on. So there's about 13 chapters about the specific historical cultures.
Are you looking at them as episodes with similar themes, or are you looking at it more as a kind of a golden thread of an underlying message that's passed through history?
Well, that's a perfect expression of what's going on, because that's exactly it. I am doing both. I mean, when you do cover these cultures in one book, and all these themes continue to emerge, then you see that there is this, as you said, golden thread running through history, and the premise is stated up front in the book. And, sometimes you have real ties, real, you know, direct a direct passing of the torch, for instance, from Sufism to the troubadour culture, and surprising links between Sufism also and the Enlightenment culture. So you have a number of these direct braids running through it and a number of indirect braids running through it. But it, hopefully it does make the statement that this spirit, at least, if it's not a direct mimetic passing on of the ideas, this spirit just seems to keep popping up. I mean, one element of the spirit, I think, that's very important and is in possibly every single chapter in the book. I'd have to go back and look at it to make that claim, but there is a playful, like, prankster thing going on in almost every one of these cultures. I mean, even Socrates was a bit of a prankster, and Diogenes, who became a follower of Plato, or actually became an irritant to Plato, again, a tremendous prankster. And so, I mean, this runs through it. This playful antic quality runs through the entire book, and I think that's the frosting, the icing on the cake for the counterculture spirit. You mentioned the Yippies earlier, and of course they're very central to this book. I actually was a member in good standing of the Youth International Party in the 1970s.
I joined them in high school, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. Back in Columbus, Ohio, was there just at the end of it?
Oh, sure. Well, Columbus, Ohio is a center.
Yeah. Yeah, we had quite a nice cell there. Actually, I almost got kicked out of high school because I invited the Yippie who pied Governor Rhodes, who had the students shot at Kent State.
Was that Aaron Kay?
What was his name?
No, somebody else.
Yeah, somebody else, but Steve somebody. But anyway, he pied the governor, and then he ran against Rhodes as a Republican. So I invited the Republican candidate for governor, and the principal got really PO'd when he found out he was a Yippie.
That's great.
Yeah, it was fun. Well, this has been delightful, and I am so delighted to reacquaint myself with your work. The various websites, revolting.com, which is still an active list, and I checked up on the revolution list that you have on Yahoo, and there's still things happening there. So,
yeah, actually, it's worth mentioning that we're vaguely rattling around the idea for an anti-authoritarian coalition of some sort, and maybe you'll hear about that in the fall.
That sounds very exciting, very interesting. And the current essays and interviews can be found at life-enhancement.com/neophiles. And the book will be Countercultures Through the Ages. Do you have a target ETA on that?
Yeah, that'll be out in November, published by Villard, which is part of Random House. So it should be all over the place.
That's great. Well, I've been speaking again with Are You Serious, the former editor of Mondo 2000 and current editor of Neophiles. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you, man.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project. Also, at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.